Healthy Life.
Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. It's my pleasure to welcome back to the program IQ Al Rasooli is calling in from Europe. Today, IQ and I are going to be observant. We're going to exercise good judgment, and we're going to scrutinize a relatively short list of internal and external self-evident contradictions in the Quran and Hadiths of Muhammad. And in so doing, we're going to continue to expose and condemn Islamic arguments that are repeated by the most ignorant news media, by ignoble politicians, by academia. And we'll take these one at a time. Listeners to this program know that IQ Al-Rasooli is an expert on Islam, that he was born and raised in a milieu of Muslims, that he used his brain to ascertain that Islam was untrue, and that because Islam is so vicious and so destructive, not only to Muslims, but to non-Muslims, he has dedicated much of his life to exposing and condemning the religion, doing the most rational and compassionate thing he can do for humankind. As part of this effort, IQ Al-Rasooli has written a series of books called Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. Today's program, for those who happen to have Volume 1 of IQ Al-Rasooli's book, can be purchased, by the way, at Amazon.com or at Author House. For those that have a copy of this book, you'll find the arguments that IQ is going to raise this morning on beginning on page 266 of Volume 1. IQ, welcome back to Shattering Myths.
Thank you for having me.
The first point that you raise is that so many Muslim apologists, knowing that they're lying, says that Islam mean peace. Does Islam mean peace? Is Islam the Arabic word for peace?
Islam is not the Arabic word for peace, because the word Islam is rooted in aslama, which means submission. It never meant peace. Salam is peace. Although they sound similar or almost identical, they're not. It's like bear, B-E-A-R, and bear, B-A-R-E. Exactly the same letter in the English language. They sound the same, but a different meaning.
Yeah, in Hebrew, shalom is peace. Shalom is actually not peace in the sense of being its primary meaning. The primary meaning of shalom is reconciliation. When you reconcile a relationship, you bring harmony and peace to that relationship, and that's what shalom means. But Islam adds a component to it that changes the meaning. And therefore, it is no longer peace, but submission. Submission, by the way, is the result of surrender. You know, you don't reconcile a relationship by surrender. Surrender is what happens when someone compels or forces someone to accept that which they would not have accepted without compulsion.
Of course, and submission in the whole of Islamic history and Islamic so-called theology, it is between a master, which is Allah, and the slave, which are the followers of Muhammad.
Right.
There is no compassion, there is no love, there is no mercy between the two.
Yeah.
You cannot have a slave relationship between master and slave, and there is love. There isn't.
Right. That's why love is not mentioned in the Quran. And it's why shalom, which is a central ingredient to Yahweh's Torah, speaks of reconciling a relationship and not of submitting to that relationship. In fact, in Hebrew, you know that in the totality of the Hebrew Torah, prophets, and Psalms, there's not a single request to obey Yahweh. God does not want our obedience, because obedience goes back to this master-slave mentality. He wants to reconcile a family-oriented and loving relationship. In other words, the very title of the religion of Islam is the antithesis of what God actually intended.
Of course, what more important than this, and the reason, in fact, for what the whole thing is all about, is in the Judeo-Christian tradition, the God of the Jews, or Jesus, does not demand submission. It demands free will. There is free will. Choose, yeah, right from wrong. In Muhammadan Islam, there is absolutely no choice. Why? Because Allah, He had predestined humanity either to believe in Him and end up in Muhammad's whorehouse version of paradise, or do not believe in Him, which is 80% of current humanity, who will end up in Allah's hell.
Yeah. By the way, right. Just to correct the terminology here, there was no Jesus. His name is Yahusha. His name is central to knowing who he is, and the idea of free will and enlightened free will, which is echoed through the concept of the Ark of the Covenant. The very word for Ark means enlightened free will. That is Yahweh's purposeful gift to us. He gave humankind life. He gave us free will, and he gave us a conscience so that we could exercise good judgment and choose wisely. Yahusha affirmed what Yahweh had revealed. The next point that I want to bring up is one that I get attacked on all the time, and I'm sure you do as well. Muslims say that Islam is tolerant. Is that true?
Good God. Anybody watching television and reading the news for the last 50, 60 years, let alone the last 20 years, there is no tolerance in Islam. There is not a single verse in Muhammad's Quran or Sunnah that shows any tolerance between
Now let me play devil's advocate here with you, IQ. I was listening to a speech by President Bush, another one by President Obama, and on a television show, the most popular television show in America, last week, a person quoted, and all three of these people quoted Quran 5:32. To say that that Islam is tolerant and peaceful, and that that Allah doesn't like humanity to commit murder. Now, doesn't Quran 5:32 suggest that we ought not be killing one another?
Yes, but what they didn't tell the audience, or maybe most probably they don't know also about it, is 5:32 was abrogated. That made overruled, made negated, made useless by the verses that followed from the Medina period. So although it is in the Quran, there's no doubt it is in the Quran, it is null and void. All the passages that were conciliatory in the Quran from the Mecca period, 124 of them were made null and void by the later verses.
Well, let me share this because the later verse happens to be the next verse in this particular case. 5:32 is a Meccan surah. A Medina surah, and it was the last surah revealed. Here's 5:32. Paraphrased here into English. That is why we decreed for the we, of course, is always used of Allah, because we is Muhammad and Allah, because Muhammad and Allah are one. That is why we decreed for the children of Israel. Now, it's interesting that this decree is not for Muslims, but for the enemy of Islam, Israel. That we decreed for the children of Israel that whoever kills a human being, except as punishment for murder or for speaking or spreading corruption in the land, it shall be like killing all humanity, and whoever saves a life and saves the entire race. Our apostles brought clear proofs to them, but even after the most of them committed excesses in the land. Now, that's 5:32. Let's speak about that for a moment. It's always quoted out of context. The person who tries to make Islam seem peaceful will only say that whoever kills a human being, it shall be like killing all humanity. And they leave out that this was addressed to the children of Israel. They leave out the exception, which is for spreading corruption in the land, and spreading corruption, according to the Quran, is anything which is opposed to Muhammad and Islam. And then they don't tell anybody that that quote was plagiarized directly from the Jewish Talmud, and that it has absolutely no place in the Quran. It sits in the Quran like a sore thumb. It's in a discussion in the Talmud regarding Cain and Abel. And then here is Quran 5:33, the very next verse, which they don't ever quote, which is probably the most ruthless and vicious verse ever attributed to God. Do you have that? I would love for you to quote it.
recompense for those who fight against Allah. By the way, in the English language, they write God on purpose. The word God is not mentioned in the Arabic language. It is always Allah. The recompense of those who fight against Allah and His Messenger and hasten about the earth, causing disorder and corruption, they shall, according to the nature of their crime, either be executed or crucified, or have their hands and feet cut off ultimately, or be banished from the land. Such is their disgrace in the world, and for them is a mighty punishment in the hereafter.
So I've got to ask you a question. IQ. Since secularists and Muslims alike quote Quran 532 incompletely, out of context, to demonstrate that Islam is peaceful, knowing full well that the next verse is the most vicious verse probably ever attributed to God, what does that say about those who are pretending to be secular humanists and tolerant of all religions and Muslims when they advance such deceptions knowing that the opposite is true? What does it say about them?
Obscene hypocrisy, duplicity, and mendacity.
Yeah, that's true. And what does it say about the fact that they work, that the average person who listens to those television shows, because it was a big part, was the concluding and head scene of the program NCIS Los Angeles, which is, I think, the top-rated show now on television. It was the lead scene, and it was the lead of point of reference in presidential speeches. The fact that it works and that most people, even journalists, don't bother to read the next verse or find that the one that they quoted was quoted out of context and that it was plagiarized from the Talmud. What does it say about the rest of us?
Stupidity.
Yeah, that we're easy to fool.
I cannot call it ignorance.
Yeah.
I would associate ignorance with somebody who cannot read and write or somebody who does not have access to information.
Okay.
But when they can read and write and they have an infinite amount of information available, at the click of a mouse, forget it. This is stupidity.
Okay. Now, let me ask you another question. If Quran 532 suggests that if you kill one person, it's like killing all of humanity, and the next verse tells Muslims that they should kill and mutilate, is that perhaps a contradiction? Hold that thought, IQ, and we will return to the potential of that being an internal contradiction when Shattering Myths continues after the commercial break. To Shattering Myths, we're here with IQ Al Rasuli. We have just compared Quran 532 and 533. IQ, simple question. If Quran 532 suggests that killing is wrong and 533 tells Muslims to kill, wouldn't that be a direct contradiction? Just two verses right next to each other? One says, hey, you ought not kill. And the next one says, you ought to kill. Is there a problem with that if you're rational?
If you're rational, there is absolutely no problem. But we're discussing 1,500 million people who have absolutely not even two brain cells of logic. They have been indoctrinated so deeply for the last 1,400 years that it is impossible for a believing Muslim, and I mean the word literally impossible, to literally figure out what he is reading or she is reading and realize that what they are reading is diabolical or satanic.
Yeah, when I tell people just emphatically, it's impossible to be an informed and rational Muslim. If you're informed and you're rational, you cannot be a Muslim. It's just an absolute statement of fact. It's an irrefutable statement of fact and logic that it's impossible to be an informed and rational Muslim. The thing that's kind of surprising to me that I get the most hate mail on is my statement that Muhammad was Allah's sole witness, that Islam had a singular spokesperson, and that singular spokesperson that invented the religion of Islam was Muhammad. And I state that emphatically because it is absolutely true. But I am always accused of being an ignoramus for making the statement by both secular humanists and by Muslims, because they say, how could you state something that's so inconsistent with the Quran, when the Quran states that that Adam and Noah and David and Abraham and Esau, which they now label as being Jesus, were all Muslim prophets, and that Muhammad was just one of many prophets of Allah, therefore discrediting my conclusion. Was?
They can't discredit your conclusion. It is a fact. It's a written document that no one ever saw Muhammad talk to the angel Gabriel or heard the angel Gabriel talk to Muhammad. It is a fact that all that humanity has about the Quran is about Muhammad's words. And when somebody studies the subject, and even if they read the Quran objectively, they will realize that every single verse, every single word, every single letter, and every single chapter were invented by Muhammad. Nobody ever revealed anything to Muhammad. They're the product of Muhammad's warped mind.
Well, let me
projected into the unsuspecting mouth of Allah and Gabriel to give them the aura of authenticity, sanctity, and divinity.
Yeah, let me take it from this perspective. Yeah, take it from this perspective. I've read all of David's, who's actually in his Dodes, Psalms. He is absolutely brilliant in his insights. He focuses on the Torah, and he speaks of Yahweh and his relationship of Yahweh based upon his understanding of the Torah. Is it therefore possible that David, based upon what we know of his writings from the Psalms, was a Muslim?
Yes, but not a Quranic Muslim.
No, don't go there. Don't go there. IQ's favorite point is to say that anyone who submits to the one true God is a Muslim. God does not want you to submit to him.
Correct. But
it might make sense from a Muslim perspective. It makes no sense from a non-Muslim perspective. Bad argument, IQ. The realization is that all of David's, whose actual name's Dodes, Psalms, spoke of the Torah, and they spoke of Yahweh. And the Torah and Yahweh are the antithesis of Allah and the Quran. So it is impossible for an informed person to view David, Dode, as an Islamic prophet. The same thing would be true with Yahusha. Yahusha, everything that Yahusha said either cited the Torah prophets and Psalms or affirmed the Torah prophets and Psalms, and nothing he said was consistent with Islam. So just because the Quran says that Yahusha and David were Islamic prophets, by making that claim, they're actually proving that they're untrustworthy, are they not?
Of course they're untrustworthy. 100% they're untrustworthy. They're untrustworthy on everything they claim.
Would it be reasonable to say, let's say that you wanted to invent a religion, and that you really liked Alexander the Great because he was a great warrior. For you to say that Alexander the Great was the founder of your religion and spoke on behalf of your religion, would that be credible?
No.
So is it credible when Muhammad says the same thing of David and Yahusha?
No. Definitely not.
Doesn't take the smartest person in the world to figure that out either. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We'll be back in a moment. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. We're here with IQ Al-Rasuli. Jason, calling in from Toronto, has a question for you on the different versions of the Quran. Go ahead, Jason.
Hi, thanks. IQ, I was just wondering, I live in Canada, and I had a question I asked myself the other day regarding, you know, what versions are actually in these mosques, in our local neighborhoods? What are they reading? Are they heavily toned down, or are they as incriminating as the ones as the quotes we find in Prophet of Doom in your books, etc.?
They are as incriminating as you can get them. They cannot modify the words. They cannot alter. They can change the nuance. For example, they write God, literally G-O-D, instead of Allah, when the Arabic word says Allah. So they want to associate in the mind of the reader that God and Allah are one and the same. But they're not the same. They sometimes put the word fight, which is qatil, which is to kill, but they do it in fight. So it has a different meaning then. Mm. But the totality of the Quran that you read today anywhere in the world, including the mosque, are identical. From Shia point of view, from the Sunni point of view, is the same. It is hate-mongering, war-mongering, misogynist, racist, duplicitous, vile, and it's totally ungodly. I hope I answered you.
Yeah, Jason, let me add a little bit to that answer. There are various translations of the Quran, as you know. The majority of the Qurans in mosques around the world are the Nobel Quran. And the reason that the Nobel Quran is so popular is that it is published in Mecca. And the publishing firm itself is owned by the Saud royal family in Saudi Arabia. And the reason that you'll find the Noble Quran as the most prolific Quran, particularly in English-speaking countries, that translation is because the most of the mosques are actually funded by the Saud royal family. And it is the most literal of the five most popular Quran translations. The Noble Quran is the most literal, and therefore it is the most vicious, it is the most savage. The most watered-down translation of the Quran is probably by Ahmed Ali. It's a Quran that was specifically designed for modern sensibilities, and it has the softest version of these things, but it's not soft. Like, for example, Ahmed Ali of Quran 533, the punishment for those who wage war against God and his prophet and who perpetrate disorders in the land is to kill or hang them or have a hand on one foot and the other cut off or banish them from the land, such as their disgrace in this world, and in the hereafter their doom shall be dreadful. It's a little softer than the Nobel Quran, but there's only so much they can do with the words.
Okay, because, yeah, I was thinking it would be pretty impactful if I was to inform, people in my own neighborhood and community, and I could quote from a Quran that's literally sitting in the mosque down the street. It might be a little more, it might hit home a little more people.
Yeah, one of the challenges, and IQ, you can add to this as well, is that most Muslims who recite the Quran do so in a version of Arabic, a religious Arabic, that they do not understand. They can recite it, but they do not know what the words mean. And also, most Muslims are Muslims because they were raised to be Muslims, and to not be a Muslim in an Islamic country is to be killed. And so most Muslims don't actually know what the Quran or Hadith say. You know, most Christians don't know what Yahusha said, or they don't even know his name. The same thing is true with a lot of Muslims. What do you think about that realization, IQ?
Well, to put it in figures, there are 1,500 million followers of Muhammad called Muslims.
Right.
A minimum of 1,250 million cannot read Arabic, do not understand Arabic. They recite the Quran by rote, by memory. You ask them what a word means, they will not be able to answer it. So 1,250 million people cannot understand, read, or understand Arabic. By the way, according to the Quran, unless you read it in Arabic and understand it in Arabic, you're not a true Muslim.
Yeah,
so I'll leave that to your imagination.
Yeah, that's also true, is that in schools, Muslims are taught to recite the Quran from memory. In religious Arabic, and they haven't a clue what the words mean. They've just learned to memorize it. And if you don't focus on memorizing, which is a huge part of your quote-unquote education, you're killed. In fact, there's a mother here that recently killed her son because he was not diligent at memorizing the Quran. But when they read it and quote it in religious Arabic, they haven't got a clue what the words actually mean. Modern standard Arabic is as different from the religious Arabic of the Quran as Italian is from Latin. And so the answer is they would not recognize it. And the other interesting point is one you raised. One of the constant complaints of Prophet of Doom is that it uses quotations or citations from the most favored and most credible English translations of the Quran by Islamic scholars. And they say, hey, because it's not written in Arabic, you're not reflecting the Quran accurately. It's as if the Quran is the only book in the world that can't intelligently be translated into other languages. Now, the reason that they don't like it when it's translated into other languages is when people can actually understand it, they recognize this is the most grotesquely immoral and vicious book ever written.
Yeah, not only that, but does it really matter? It matters more about, you know, what's actually being taught to these people who are, you know, going to these mosques. And, you know, as far as, like, being sort of persecuted or whatever for attacking a person's religion or whatever, if you were just to make aware of the public what was said in the books in their mosques, what are you doing wrong? Because, you know, right, obviously they're published in every single mosque. So
yeah, that's one of the issues of Prophet of Doom. I'm constantly accused, I'm sure IQ is also accused, for his book Lifting the Veil, of slandering Islam, of besmirching the reputation of Muhammad. And yet, how can you be besmirching someone's reputation when 100% of what you write is based upon the words and deeds of Muhammad? I mean, 100% of Prophet of Doom, 1,000 pages long, it presents the words and deeds of Muhammad. And the fact that that makes Muhammad out to be who he was, a perverted and vicious man, not my fault.
Jason, can you
go ahead, IQ? Yes, please, go ahead, IQ.
The whole entity of Islam, Muhammad and his Quran, are beneath contempt. It is impossible to insult either the Quran or Muhammad because they are beneath contempt. I'm not talking about racism here. I'm not talking about hate. As Yada said, there is absolutely nothing in loving in there. There is no salvation. There is no redemption. All it contains are hate, hate, and more hate. Hate towards whom? 80% of current humanity. All Christians, Buddhists, Hindus, anybody who's not a follower of Muhammad. But on top of that, each sect of Islam, the Shia and the Sunnah, call each other unbelievers and murder each other with exactly the same abandon as they murder you and me and Yada.
Yeah. The only compassionate thing an informed and rational person can do is to expose and condemn those things which are as perverted, as destructive, as deadly, as deceitful as is the Quran and Hadith of Muhammad. If you are not engaged in the process of exposing and condemning what is known about Islam and Muhammad, then you are either ignorant, irrational, or immoral.
Yeah. Yeah, not only that, but, I mean, you've experienced being censored in Canada particularly.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And
yeah, I'm a criminal in Canada.
And I asked myself, like, well, if they're allowed to publish this hate speech and keep it in their mosques and teach the people, why, you know, it would be probably better in Canada if one were to put up a website where it's just quotes from the Quran. I mean, that would be enough to at least make people aware that, hey, this isn't just a religion. These people are seeking world domination by any means possible.
You know, it is true. And IQ, I think you'd agree with this, that if you just read the Quran, that any informed and rational person is going to read the Quran and say, this is absolute rubbish, and it's not only deceitful, but it's deadly, it's destructive. But the reason that IQ wrote his books, Lifting the Veil, and the reason I wrote Prophet of Doom, is that it is much easier for people to understand if the various things that Muhammad said and did are brought together either by topic or by chronology. To put the Quran, for example, in the context of Muhammad's life and to reorder it chronologically so that in the context of Muhammad's life it can be understood is a much more effective way to communicate why this religion is so deceitful and so destructive and so deadly. IQ wrote his books ordering what the Quran and Hadith have to say by topic, which is an equally effective way of exposing it. Because if you were simply to read the Quran, you would know very little about Islam, because most of the practice of Islam actually comes from the Hadith, first of all. And second of all, since the Quran is such a jumbled mess, without context or without chronology, it's extremely difficult to understand.
Yeah. Oh, thanks very much for asking my great answer.
Sure. Thank you, Jason, for the call. IQ, are you in agreement that the Quran is a jumbled mess without context or chronology?
It is impossible to dispute that. It is a jumble. It's a tossed salad of everything. There is absolutely no logic in it. There's no beginning, there's no middle, there's no end in the whole of the book. And there's no beginning and no middle and no end in any of the chapters.
So is it, so if you want to, so I would say, so would it be more helpful to understand what the Quran is trying to communicate if you were to reorder it chronologically and to put it into context of Muhammad's life?
100%, of course, obviously.
Well, we're going to return to Shattering Myths in a moment. We're here with IQ Al-Rasuli, and we're going to continue through his list of proofs that the Quran is a complete fraud. Good morning and welcome to the final segment of Shattering Myths. This morning we have with us IQ Al-Rasuli. We're going to engage in the fourth point on IQ's short list of self-evident contradictions in the Quran. His point actually is derived, I believe, from Quran 5:15. Let me read it to you, and then we'll get IQ to respond. It says, O people of the book, the people would be Yehudim, Jews, the book would be the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. There has come to you our apostle. This is Allah speaking on behalf of Muhammad, but since Muhammad is Allah, that's why it's our, revealing to you much of what you used to hide in your scripture, suppressing and passing over much. There has come to you from Allah a light and a clear book. Is it possible, IQ, that there was much that was revealed by Yahweh to Moshe in the Torah and to others in the prophets and Psalms that was removed from those books? And not only removed from them, but that would have supported Islam. Is that historically, rationally possible?
Not a chance, for two reasons. Never, not even once in the whole of the Quran, did Muhammad reveal anything new that in any way, shape, or form was equal to or superior to anything that he plagiarized, plundered, pirated, and or perverted from the Hebrew Bible. Not a single item. Now, if he, since he asserts that the Hebrew Bible has been tampered with, all they have to do, him or his followers, is to prove it. But they can't prove it.
Well, the opposite is true. The Dead Sea Scrolls, which were written between 250 BCE through about 65 CE, affirm the reliability of the current text of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And these manuscripts date back to between 500 and 700 years before Muhammad made this claim that huge amounts of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms had been removed by the Jews. So the when the Dead Sea Scrolls were found, it was proof, absolute emphatic proof, that the primary claim of Allah in his Quran is untrue. So how does a Muslim deal with that? The Dead Sea Scrolls prove that Quran 5:15 is a false statement. How does a Muslim deal with that?
Very simple. They denied it. We agreed. It is impossible to have them with a rational brain.
But how do you deny the Dead Sea? How do you deny the Dead Sea Scrolls?
Well, they can. They deny the existence of Israel. They deny the existence of the history of the Jews. They deny the Holocaust. They deny that the Twin Towers were killed, were masterminded by Qaeda. They deny it.
Well, you know, there's not even I mean, the subject that I know the best is the Torah. I have not found a single, even minor contradiction in the Torah. And for this claim of Allah in the Quran to be true, then there must have been originally a Torah that contradicted itself, that its main theme was to present Islam, which is the antithesis of the Torah's teaching. Oh, how is that even remotely possible?
Well, let us assume for an instant that it is possible. All we are asking you and I or anybody else is, hey, Muslims, show us the Torah that from which that you say the new Torah that we have, or the current Torah that we have, is abrogated or overruled. Show us the one that you have, the original.
Or give us an explanation of how every scroll that has been found anywhere in the world that has any antiquity confirms the witness of the Torah as opposed to contradicts it. How are you going to deal with a mountain of evidence that proves that what you're saying is untrue? Oh, by the way, in the Torah, in the midst of the Torah, Yahweh tells Moshe that if any other name other than Yahweh is used to describe God, that source of information and that God are false. So right in the middle of the Torah, Yahweh says, I have only one name, it's Yahweh, and that any other name for God is the name of a false God. So how is it possible then that Allah could have been the source of inspiration to Moses?
It can't be. It never was. But it will not change an iota from the warm mind of a Muslim.
Yeah. And beyond all of that, Yahweh says the one place I can't go is the place of separation, which we consider to be hell today. And yet Allah spends all of his time there. They aren't the same. We'll return with IQ Al-Rasuli next week on Shattering Myths.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, that I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact.